Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Brian Lynn, Susan Shand, and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Iran says it plans to go beyond limits placed on its uranium enrichment in the next 10 days. The limit was set in the 2015 nuclear agreement with world powers. A spokesman for Iran's Atomic Energy Agency, Behrouz Kamalvandi, made the statement while speaking to reporters on state-operated television. He said, "Today the countdown to pass the 300 kilograms reserve of enriched uranium has started, and in 10 days' time, the limit will be passed." Kamalvandi said that Iran had already increased its uranium production to 4 times of what it had been before. He said this increase was based on the country's needs. Under the 2015 deal, Iran agreed to keep no more than 300 kilograms of low-enrichment uranium. When it is highly enriched, uranium can be used as a fuel for nuclear weapons. The country is believed to have had 10,000 kilograms of uranium with a higher enrichment level before the agreement. U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew the U.S. from the agreement last year, saying it did not do enough to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons. The Trump administration also has noted Iran's support of conflicts in Syria and Yemen and of extremist groups such as Hezbollah and Hamas. Since withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal, the U.S. has again placed strong international economic restrictions on Iran. The other parties to the agreement, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany, are still trying to save the deal with Iran. On Monday, Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, met with France's new ambassador to Tehran. He warned that time was running out for the deal. "The current situation is very critical, and France and the other parties to the deal still have a very limited opportunity to play their historic role for saving the deal," Rouhani said in a statement on his website. Iran also set a July 7th date for European powers to come up with an agreement to save the deal, or it would move away from the agreement, likely meaning it would increase enrichment further. Iran's plan to increase uranium production comes as debate continues over the attacks on 2 oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman last week. On Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on television that he blamed Iran for the attacks, saying these were attacks by the Islamic Republic of Iran on commercial shipping. Iran's Armed Forces Chief of Staff, Major General Mohammad Behari denied on Monday that Iran was behind the attacks on the tankers. He said if Iran decided to block shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, it would do so publicly. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
A growing number of American firefighters are now using drones to help with their life-saving work. The city of Fremont, California, uses 14 drones to help fight fires and carry out other public safety and rescue activities. Jeff Clevin is the acting chief of operations for the Fremont Fire Department. He told VOA that in the future, every fire truck will be equipped with a drone to assist firefighters. Drones used by fire departments usually have additional equipment added to collect valuable information for firefighters. Such tools can identify fire sources, extreme heat areas, and the positions of firefighters in the field. Recently, a police search and rescue team in Fremont used a drone equipped with an infrared camera that can identify body heat. The technology was able to find a lost deaf child at night. The New York-based Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College examines the use of drones by public safety departments across the United States. The center estimated last year that more than 900 state and local agencies in the U.S. use drones for police, fire, and emergency services. The Fremont Fire Department received its drone systems from Chinese technology company DJI, the world's largest drone maker. Recently, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, repeated a warning that Chinese-made drones could be leaking information to China. In 2017, the U.S. Army barred the use of DJI's drones. Jeff Clevin said his department takes such concerns very seriously. But he said officials have been careful to take steps to prevent any data leaks to China. "We are well aware of the accusations that are being made. It's not something new," Clevin said. He added that the department attempts to keep the data local to reduce the possibility that it could be shared. "There are ways we don't have to be connected to the internet. We can isolate our data within our system. We are confident with that." Romeo Derscher leads DJI's relations with public safety agencies. He denied the accusations of information being leaked to China. He said the company has worked during the past year to provide drone users more security controls over their data. "We are not in the business of controlling data," Derscher said. "But we want to give the tools to the operator to say how the data is being stored or processed or transmitted." Derscher estimates that more than 1,000 U.S. fire, police, and other emergency first responders use drones. He said this has led to more than 200 lives saved worldwide. I'm Brian Lynn.
There is trouble in one of Iceland's most special industries, the production of hand-knit Lopi sweaters. Visitors love to buy them, and Icelanders happily wear them. Each sweater is made by hand. The unique piece of clothing has come to represent Iceland for many tourists. But local knitters are angry at the rise in Icelandic sweaters being made in China. The China-made sweaters use real wool from Icelandic sheep, but the actual knitting process is outsourced to workers in China. The wool is shipped to China, knitted by hand, and then returned as a finished product to Iceland. The sweaters are described as hand-knitted from Icelandic wool. Knitting groups around Iceland are struggling to compete. Last month, they asked the Icelandic government to ban companies from calling wool sweaters as Icelandic unless they are really made in Iceland. People buy the imported sweaters as the real thing, said Turidur Einarsdottir. She is the founder of the Hand Knitting Association of Iceland. But it is not, she added. The business needs tourists because most Icelanders already own a sweater, Einarsdottir added. She created the Hand Knitting Association in the 1970s to help women make more money from the stores that sold their sweaters. The Lopi wool comes from Iceland's 500,000 sheep. Their fleece is especially strong and warm. The sweaters are impossible to make by machine. One adult-sized sweater usually takes between 14 and 25 hours to knit. The time depends on the number of colors used and whether there are buttons. The Chinese sweaters have taken nearly two-thirds of sales. They appeal to tourists because of their low price. Sweaters made in Iceland sell for about $200. Sweaters made in China cost about $30 less. I'm Susan Shand.
Older women who walk a little over 3 kilometers each day might live longer than less active women of the same age, a new study suggests. Many Americans, hoping to stay healthy, set a daily goal of 10,000 steps, or about 8 kilometers. They often have this goal because they are wearing electronic devices which set that target, note researchers in the United States. Their findings appeared recently in the publication JAMA Internal Medicine. But it is not clear how much intensity or speed matter when counting the health benefits of every step, the researchers write. They add that 10,000 steps per day might not be the right goal for everyone. For the study, researchers observed 17,000 women, all in their early 70s. They asked the women to wear accelerometers for at least 4 days. Accelerometers are small devices that measure the number of steps and the intensity of movement. The researchers followed up with the women much later, around 4.3 years later, on average. Since the beginning of the study, 504 women had died. Compared to women who took no more than 2,718 steps daily, the women who took at least 4,363 steps per day were 41% less likely to die. Even a modest amount of steps is associated with lower mortality, said Aimin Lee, the lead writer of a report on the study. She is a doctor with Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. The women who took more steps had lower mortality rates until about 7,500 steps per day, beyond which no further declines were observed, Lee told the Reuters news agency. The rate of stepping did not matter in these older women. It was the number of steps that mattered. This suggests that the number of steps, rather than intensity, may be more important for a long life among older women. The study had a few limitations. For example, the researchers only measured women's movements once, at the start of the study period. It is possible that the women's behaviors changed over time. Still, the results are good news for older adults who may have difficulty walking at faster paces, said Keith Diaz, a researcher at Columbia University Medical Center in New York City. He was not involved in the study. Any walking is better than nothing, Diaz said by email. With even small amounts of walking, your risk of death will be sharply reduced. For those who have difficulty walking, other research shows that any form of aerobic activity provides health benefits, he added. Swimming, bicycling, arm cranking, or any form of activity that is continuous in nature will provide health benefits. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Story on January 20th, 1961, the day John Fitzgerald Kennedy became President of the United States. It had snowed heavily the night before. Few cars were in the streets of Washington. The outgoing president, Dwight Eisenhower, was 70 years old. John Kennedy was just 43. He was the first American president born in the 20th century. Both Eisenhower and Kennedy served in World War II. Eisenhower had been commander of Allied forces in Europe. Kennedy had been a young Navy officer in the Pacific. He came from a politically influential family in Boston, Massachusetts. But he was a fresh face in national politics. To millions of Americans, he represented a chance for a new beginning. Not everyone liked him, however. Many people thought he was too young to be president. Others did not like the idea of electing the nation's first Roman Catholic president. Eisenhower's vice president, Richard Nixon, ran against Kennedy in the election of 1960. Many people believed Nixon was a stronger opponent of communism than Kennedy. The election of 1960 was one of the closest in American history. Kennedy defeated Nixon by fewer than 120,000 votes. Now, on the steps of the Capitol building, he would be sworn in as the nation's 35th president. One of the speakers at the inauguration was the 86-year-old poet Robert Frost. The wind was blowing the paper in his hands, and the sun was shining off the snow on the ground and into his eyes. Kennedy stood to help him, but the famous poet was unable to read much of the poem he had written specially for the ceremony. Instead, he began another one that he knew from memory. Here is a studio recording of Robert Frost reading his poem, The Gift Outright.
The land was ours before we were the lands. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts, in Virginia, but we were England's, still colonials, possessing what we still were unpossessed by, possessed by what we now no more possessed. Something we were withholding made us weak until we found out that it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living and forthwith found salvation in surrender. Such as we were, we gave ourselves outright. The deed of gift was many deeds of war to the land vaguely realizing westward, but still unstoried, artless, uninhanced, such as she was, such as she would become.
Soon it was time for the new president to speak. He was not wearing a winter coat or a hat, unlike many of the people around him. One of the issues that Kennedy talked about was the danger of what he called the deadly atom. He was taking office during the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. Both sides had atomic bombs. People worried that there could be a World War III that would end in nuclear destruction. Kennedy said both sides should make serious proposals for the inspection and control of nuclear weapons. He said they should explore the good in science instead of the terrors.
Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the deserts, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depths, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just, and the weak secure, and the peace preserved.
Kennedy also spoke about a torch of leadership being passed to a new generation of Americans. He urged young people to take the torch and accept responsibility for the future. He also urged other countries to work with the United States to create a better world.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
John Kennedy was in office less than 2 weeks when the Soviet Union released 2 American airmen. The Soviets had shot down their spy plane over the Bering Sea. About 60 million people watched as Kennedy announced the airmen's release. It was the first presidential news conference broadcast live on television in the United States. Kennedy welcomed the release as a step toward better relations with the Soviet Union. The next month, Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev made another move toward better relations. He sent Kennedy a message. The message said that disarmament would be a great joy for all people on Earth. A few weeks later, President Kennedy announced the creation of the Peace Corps. He had spoken about his idea during the election campaign. The Peace Corps would send thousands of Americans to developing countries to teach and provide technical assistance. Soon after the Peace Corps was created, another program was announced. The purpose of the Alliance for Progress was to provide economic aid for 10 years to nations in Latin America. Another subject that Kennedy had talked about during the election campaign was the space program. He believed the United States should continue to explore outer space. The Soviet Union had gotten there first. It launched the world's first satellite in 1957. Then, in April 1961, the Soviet Union sent the first manned spacecraft into orbit around Earth. That same month, the new American president suffered a foreign policy failure. On April 17th, more than 1,000 Cuban exiles landed on a beach in western Cuba. They had received training and equipment from the United States Central Intelligence Agency. They were supposed to lead a revolution to overthrow the communist government of Fidel Castro. The place where they landed was Bahia de Cochinos, the Bay of Pigs. The invasion failed. Most of the exiles were killed or captured. It was not Kennedy's idea to try to start a revolution in Cuba. Officials in the last administration of Dwight Eisenhower had planned it. However, most of Kennedy's advisors supported the idea, and he approved it. In public, the president said he was responsible for the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion. In private, he said, "All my life, I've known better than to depend on the experts. How could I have been so stupid?" What happened in Cuba damaged John Kennedy's popularity. His next months in office would be a struggle to regain the support of the people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.